Oh, really? The chat window was wide that night.
All right.
I'm just teasing.
Hey, good afternoon. I think we're coming upon the 2 o'clock hour, or Eastern Standard Time, here in New York City. We're at DBA in the Garden in lovely East Village. I'm Dan Mellinger, here with Eli Chapman for the weekly show. We're both part of the unmediated.org team. We're tracking the tools that decentralize the media. I believe that's our tagline, something
and
like that.
And decentralizing it ourselves.
That's what we're trying to do. We're using the technology backbone of the weekly show is Sean Van Every's interactive telejournalism platform. We assume you're watching where you've got a little screen on the left side and a chat window on the right side. And the chat window is your window onto us and our window onto you, where we can send you URLs and you can feed us questions, chat amongst yourselves, and keep the conversation going. We want you to be interviewers just like we're interviewers. And today we're going to have two guests with us. One is Jay Deedman of, what's your blog called?
MomentShowing.typepad.com. Deedman or Deedman? Deedman.
Okay.
Deedman. Jay Deedman.
Okay.
Also founder of the video blogging group on Yahoo with Peter Van Dyke.
Actually say things out loud for the first time, you actually have to think about how you might want to pronounce things.
It's yeah. We don't have the teleprompter yet. It's in the maybe version 3.
Sean's working on that in the dungeon.
Actually, Sean, I just read that you're going to be giving a presentation at ACM and out here next week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Sean Van Avery, whose system we're using here, is actually giving a presentation of it at the biggest global multimedia software conference. All these excellent university researchers, corporate researchers, fantastic stuff. I'm excited to see how it goes for Sean. I think it's October 10th through the 14th, if I remember correctly. There's actually some excellent work going to be shown from Garage Cinema Research out in Berkeley. Mark Davis, the head of that program from MIT, who's been probably one of the researching the field of helping ordinary people be able to tell stories using video for years, and he's got his own department at Berkeley. Ryan Shaw, who's on the Unmediated team, is head of software development, I believe, over at Garage Cinema. And then there's another team from MIT, part of the Media Fabrics group, used to be called Interactive Cinema. Isling Kelleher, I believe is the name, and Barbara Barry, they're going to be giving some excellent presentations as well, I believe. So
lots of interesting stuff.
Yeah, lots of interesting stuff. We'll try and blog it for you on the on Unmediated.
Are you going to do that?
If I can find a way to weasel myself in without paying the ridiculous workshop fees.
Can I demonstrate my thing for a while?
I just got an invite to go with Sean to help demonstrate that, and I'll get a free pass.
You don't have to be in for a day or something.
Oh, that sounds excellent. Well, anyway.
West Coast? Where's that?
No, it's here in New York.
Here in New York?
Yeah,
cool.
It changes every year. It's international. Amsterdam was in Berkeley last year.
All right.
Yeah, ACM, I believe it's acm2004.org, but I'm not positive. If you Google ACM 2004, yeah. It'll come up.
Someone please post that to the chat so we can get it in our chat transcript, which, incidentally, Sean is working on linking directly to the video, so we've got sort of time when people post things related to the video that's coming through. So essentially you'll be able to have the lines of chat associated with specific times in the video. And our second guest today is Jeff Galusha. Of Conscious TV.
With a K.
Conscious with a K. A production company. He'll talk about it a little more later, but doing a lot of very interesting things with independent video.
If the name sounds familiar, it's from the Conscious.TV RNC project we did here with the ITJ setup of Sean's. And we had a team with Jeff and another person in Madison Square Garden and then a few teams out in the field doing a live show that was also broadcast on MNN, thanks to Jay and some other people, live at 7 o'clock, as well as this being live on the web with people asking questions. And it was a lot of fun. It was a real test of the technology and demonstration that it actually can work, and you can do these lo-fi interactive things that just were not possible a few years ago. So it's pretty unbelievable.
So Sean just posted the URLs. Jeff is also a student at the Interactive Telecommunications Program, place where I graduated this past May, and I hope maybe you could talk a little bit about what he's doing there and what's going on there in general around the space.
We've had 2 weeks of shows. This is our third show, and it's going pretty well. I mean, we're getting
three sunny days. We've been really, really lucky about that, because I don't know what we're going to do when it starts raining. Actually, I do know what we're going to do. We're going to have to go in over there under the tent, but we've been lucky enough to be under the canopy of the trees.
And we're really just getting started here. We're going to start bringing lots of different people in. We're going to try and get some continuity as far as the subjects of the show go. We're probably going to set up a little bit more of a structure to the show. We're giving you the recap right now, then we're going to bring in the guests, and you guys can just speak with the guests and see what happens. And we're going to let the thing evolve. You can email us at weeklyshow@unmediated.org for suggestions. You can chat right here, or there's a comment thread on the most recent post about the weekly show up on unmediated.org.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
So, to get started, we were talking about video blogging with Jay the other day at a Wednesday night little evening meeting we had, and we thought we should bring him in. From last week, he was chatting and asking some good questions, and he's really basically trying to teach people how to use video and post it on the web and start conversations with it, and so he's having a lot of problems. It's a challenging thing. There's not good technology for him right now, but there's developers working on things. Up on the video blogging group at Yahoo. There's Open Media, rmedia.org, with Mark Cantor and JD Lasico, which is coming up. And that's going to allow for storage of your media, anything that you want to be Creative Commons licensed or just open source. Some interesting things. So we're going to talk to him about his experiences and how it's going so far. And maybe we should just bring him in.
Yeah, I think so. Sounds good.
Yeah?
So
you want to talk?
No, I'm going to step out.
All right.
Yeah, I think
you
may need to probably do this.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So we're going to bring Jay on here.
All right.
So, Jay, to give you a little background, Jay is at MNN, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks.
Right.
And I got a simple question for you.
Yep.
What was the first time that you posted video to the web?
Yep. It was probably back in July of this year, so about 4 months ago.
How's the audio on Jay? Is it mic all right?
Can you hear me? I think it's all right.
You might want to move it up a little
okay.
bit.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, everyone. I think I saw Shannon out there who's, I think, in L.A. right now, who's on the video blogging group. Shannon, you're out there? Can you see me?
Little delay.
All right.
Yeah, so tell me about what was the process like? What was your intent? What tools did you use? Yeah. How long did it take you? What was the deal?
These are good questions. I first got to say is that I'm not a very technical person when it comes to the computer. I can't program HTML. I can't program anything, you know. I'm a video guy. I teach people how to make television at a public access station. So I worked with Peter, who I formed the video blogging group with, and he showed me how to do it. I say it's simple now, but it's not that simple.
Well, tell me about the first process.
Sure. So, I got a blog.
Shot some video.
I shot some.
What'd you shoot?
Yep. I shot a video of it's myself, trying to get my own blog. So I videoed it. Taped it's myself going to Typepad and trying to figure out how to sign up for a blog because I'd never had a blog before. And then once I got that blog, Peter and I had to figure out how to post a video. Because Typepad doesn't make it easy for you to post.
Well, before even that, how did you get the video onto the computer?
Sure. We were using a little digital still camera.
Okay.
That puts it onto a compact flash card.
Sure, so it shoots a little MPEG movie or something.
Got it. And then I just imported that onto its desktop.
And it's a Mac you're using, a PC?
Correct. I mean, it's using a Macintosh computer.
Okay, so you just dragged it in like it was from a hard drive.
Correct.
So you had a little MPEG movie on your desktop, and then you wanted to put that up on Typepad.
Right.
But you went to the button that says add photo or something, and it couldn't deal with the video.
Yeah, add file. And so then we figured out you got to go to add file, and then it just puts up there as a file, and Typepad there just puts the first frame up, so it just becomes like this black image normally, you know. And then we learned, you got to use tools like Ecto or Mars Edit to actually make the thumbnail into a picture, make it clickable.
Right, because it was just putting the video there on a server and it didn't know how to stream it, it didn't know how to play it.
Exactly.
So people weren't able to hit play, basically.
Absolutely.
Okay, so
Edit, yeah, sure. So the question is, what is Ecto and what is Mars Edit? Well, these are two blogging tools that you can get. MarsEdit is free. Ecto is free for 2 weeks. Then you got to pay $17 for.
And they're desktop-based tools.
Yep, they're desktop-based tools. They are absolutely, it's necessary right now to video blog in any way good, you know, and it helps you make its video into a poster, its movie, and you can change like the size and click.
Right, so it solves the problem of getting video up there in a way where people just click and press play.
But then again, it's also another layer that you have to add to the whole process.
So you had the digital camera, still camera that let you shoot a little MPEG movie.
Right.
You dragged it out of the camera onto your Mac desktop.
Right.
You used Ecto to create a new post,
right,
which grabbed that video and then sent that off to TypePad.
Correct.
All right, so you had your first post up, and what was that
like? But then it sucked because the only person who saw it was my friend Peter.
And the one who helped you do it.
Right, and he was nice enough to put a comment on it because I'd never had a blog it's before, and you got to have that back and forth. So I was like, well, this sucks. And so I sat on it for about a month. I posted one more its video and was very like, this is stupid, you know. But I've got this its vision where I want to be able to go on the internet and see video about people's lives everywhere, you know. So obviously its next step is, well, let's form a community. And Peter helped me to form the blogging, the its video blogging group on its Yahoo. And then I did the bit about organizing, which I do in my daily job, which is basically I would go through the web and find people who were talking about his video and emailing them and saying, hey, come and join this group.
Right.
So we got like Adrian Miles.
Sure. He's at Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology. Fantastic guy.
Correct.
He's I'm going to go on standby here. He's been involved with video blogging as long as anyone. He actually created the word VOG.
He's the guy.
And he has a manifesto. If you just do a Google, I think, for Adrian Miles, or at least even maybe just VOG, you'll probably get to his site.
Yep.
And Adrian does something very different. I mean, he doesn't just post video about, stuff from his life as much as he really creates something new with the medium. And he does a lot of stuff where there are interactive QuickTime movies where you can click and move into things and navigate through the space. And he's doing some experimental stuff. He's got a manifesto up, and he's breeding video bloggers over there because he's a teacher, and his program is the networked cinema program, basically.
Yep.
And it's just fantastic. A lot of his student blogs are on the video blogging group, and they're making some excellent work and just experimenting.
Yep, and I mean, he was a big part of it, and then Steve Garfield, who is like the poster child for his video blogging.
Sure, Steve Garfield, based in Massachusetts.
SteveGarfield.com, yeah. And then there's Andreas, who is in Denmark. He's a 21-year-old student going through this college in Denmark, and he's been a powerhouse. He's been developing a lot of the tools that we've been using. And so we have there's 80 people on this list, but about 20 pretty active people. And only about 10 people who actually post his video on a regular basis.
Right.
So it starts like this, and then it starts coming down to who's actually doing it.
Right.
So
Shannon says that she found you on
Rhizome.org? Correct, yeah. We also got these two other video bloggers that I got to. It's mentioned, it's Micah and Charlene, who are both, it's New York based. And they are also like me, don't know anything about programming, but they are just artists. And they post more than anybody else in our group. And they started putting the word out to these art-based websites. And that's how Shannon, who is a flame artist in LA, found out about us. And he is also, is now one of the most prolific and adventuresome bloggers on our group.
So let's talk a little bit about the community and growing the community and nurturing the community. When you talk about prolific video bloggers, how much of what they do involves inspiring conversations or participation among their audience or among their peers?
Sure. It's difficult right now because you have to go to everyone's blog to view their things. We have created an RSS feed where we put all of our videos into it so you can see them all. It really depends on people's choice. Sometimes someone will make a video and no one says a word. Sometimes a video can spark all kinds of conversations. But we're trying to create something now called It Video Comments, where we're specifically trying to create a video blogging collaborative tool where I can post a video and then you can post a comment as, or a video as a comment, and then you could see them all like a conversation.
Is the RSS video feed live right now, active right now?
Sure. If we actually created a public website, it's videoblogging.info, and you can subscribe to the RSS feed through there. And actually, anyone who makes a video blog post can add a video to our RSS feed.
In some ways, videoblogging.info is kind of like a Technorati or scripting.com. It's a place you can ping, basically,
exactly,
if you've posted something with video, and it's just the central aggregator of the meta information that says, hey, a ping is just a little bit of information sent out. When you put a new post on your blog, it sends out information to a central server somewhere and says, hey, I got a new post. And then a lot of developers will write software that'll crawl through the pinging site so that they go to the new post and then they can update and find new information.
And this is a good question here. Like, are we putting these videos up as enclosures on the RSS feed? No. I don't know how to do that. I mean,
what an enclosure is. What is an enclosure? An enclosure, in my mind, is just the way that when you're downloading your RSS feeds, you get your video too, and you don't have to deal with anything. You just, when you're reading your post, there's video in there. You don't have to separately go up to the web and hit download, etc. But at the moment, it's not happening. It's probably a good thing too, because it would end up sucking bandwidth like crazy, because every time someone came to get the feed, it would bring down your video, even if you already have it. But just to get back to the idea of conversations, back in about in 1999, 2000, I tried to get a little filmmaking collaborative going here in New York, where we were going to all collaboratively work on the same project, meaning the same thread of information. Like, we were going to do, we were all going to make a video about isolation, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to make little short videos, and we were going to use these new collaborative video editing tools that I was working on, and someone at MIT was working on, to try it out. But it was very difficult to get the group formed, because the people who are skilled enough with the technology to shoot and edit and whatever they want have to do, they often want to use the technology to express themselves in their own way, and not necessarily in this way of this new thing, this new medium, trying to do something different. I'm wondering if you're finding that to be a problem, or if you see that, how to break through that.
Sure, that's actually the core issue that we're at right now. You know, how do you get people to, it's video blog, how do you get them interested? It seems like if you make anything too structured, they don't want to do it, you know, which I don't blame them. So I think the real goal is to make video blogging as simple as possible, and then just let people just go at it, you know.
Well, just Jawson's correcting me here about the enclosure, RSS mm-hmm. enclosure. He's saying if it's torrent in the enclosure, BitTorrent, then it's peer-to-peer bandwidth, yes, that you're not going to be sucking bandwidth. My apologies. Thank you,
right.
Jawson. Just to get back to what you were just saying,
uh-huh,
what the problem that exists, though, is because the technology is at a certain level where it's very difficult to video blog,
right,
you have a very limited number of participants. So with regular blogging, you've got enough, a large enough audience that there's enough conversations about similar topics that people can find people they're interested in, and you can form smaller communities with 50 or 100 or even 1,000 video bloggers from all around the world. It's very difficult for people to want to make stuff about the same things, because there's just not enough people to do that.
Yeah, so I mean, like, we've talked about this, that there are literally probably no more than 50 people, and that's being generous, who are regularly posting its video publicly, you know. And I mean,
yeah,
in the whole entire world, which is, I mean, that's where we're at right now.
Well, I disagree with the number 50. I think that, just for example, I mean, Text America, Dan Malinger was showing me Text America. They have a ton of, you can post from your camera video phones.
And are people doing that?
Yeah, there's quite a few videos up there.
Okay, well, I've got to.
But that's the point, is that it's coming from a different place. It's not coming from video cameras, it's coming from video camera phones.
Right.
And you're seeing video blogging come out of that, not as video blogging, but just as a natural way to share your videos. And there, and it's there's starting to be communities built out around that. So it'll be interesting to see.
Well, that's something that we talk about in the video blogging group, is just about style. Is it about just posting little short, it's moments, like one, like 10-second little bloop, here it is? Or is it about editing a story together, like a 3-minute story?
So you guys want to wrap and get Jeff involved?
Sure, okay. Well, are there any questions from the chat room here about video blogging, about Jay's experience with it, what he's up to? We'll give a few seconds for that to hit the feed.
And just real quick, so I think the next step to really make this blow up is that we need a simple tool. And I'm going to call Sean out on this. Sean Van Every has talked about maybe actually helping to make a simple, like, Java tool could make all this like an all-in-one video blogging tool that would edit, simple edit, compress, and post. Boom. And until you have that, it's going to be a battle, I think.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And it's amazing, too, because when you think about nonlinear editing systems like Final Cut Pro or Avid, they have all the technology to do that built into them.
Sure.
But they're built totally for a different application.
Sure.
And, you know, so you would try capturing your video there, and then you'd have to put it together on a timeline.
Yeah.
It's more complicated. Then you'd have to export and transcode it, and then you just still have to upload and find a way to do that.
And the other thing that has been a hindrance has been storage and bandwidth. And I just want to let everyone know, go to armmedia.org. This we've been talking about, but it's supposedly going to be happening at the beginning of it's November, where people can start testing. It's going to be free bandwidth and free storage if you allow your videos to be public for other people to see them.
So check out Video Blogging Group at Yahoo. I think it's just group.yahoo.com/video blogging. Check out R Media. I think it's r-media.org, or just rmedia.org. And momentshowing.typepad.com is Jay's blog, video blog, and see what he's up to and give him an email. What's your email? You want to say your email?
Yep, it's just my first name at mnn.org, jay@mnn.org.
Well, thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot.
Maybe we'll get you back up with some questions.
All right.
All right, so we're going to hand over the reins here to Dan Mellinger and Jeff, and thanks a lot. See you next week.
Make sure you move the mouse even, otherwise it'll go on standby.
Okay. My apologies for all the shuffling noises as we get our mics hooked up. Welcome, Jeff.
Well, thanks, Dan. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Having a nice day. Had a good weekend. How are you doing, Jeff?
Oh, good. Good. I was pretty inspired by some of the stuff that Jay's doing, and I posted my first stuff to a blog last... Yeah. Or I changed my blog into a vlog. Uh-huh. And I put up a couple videos.
So is your experience similar to Jay's original experience?
Yeah, I emailed him. I'm like, I don't know if I know
so
how to put up.
So he was helping you out with this.
Yeah, well, a little bit. As I just wrote him, I don't know if I can post a video. And I just uploaded it, and it was up there. So
cool.
I haven't put the JPEG up or anything like that. But I don't know. I think if you Google my name, Jeffrey Galusha, and Deblog as one word, D-A-B-L-O-G.
It's Jeffrey the J, right?
Yeah.
J-E-F-F-R-E-Y. Tell us a little bit about your background in terms of video, whatever you want to talk about, but conscious especially, I'm interested in. I don't know how that got started.
Yeah. So a little bit of my history is I graduated from San Diego State, and I went into the Peace Corps. And I made a video about this school in Bolivia, and I sent it back up to the United States to my hometown, and that video helped get $3,000 worth of funding to renovate the school. And so I couldn't believe the power of the visual image for me. Mm-hmm. And so when I returned back to my hometown and became a teacher, and again I started using video in my class because I was teaching Spanish, and if the kids could see themselves speaking Spanish and how their mouth moved and how what it needed to do, it helped them with their diction and helped them with their pronunciation and their confidence. And so I just kept dabbling with video, and I made a video about the killing fields in Cambodia. I went to Cambodia for a trip, and I came back and the whole school watched the video. It just got passed around from classroom to classroom to classroom, so I figured I needed to get into video education. And so I moved to New York and that's where I met my boy John Carr, and he's the guy who started Conscious Media. It's a 501c3. They did a lot of work to get to that point, and we started posting videos that you could watch with Real Player.
Who's producing these videos?
Well, actually, they were mostly submissions at that point in time. Mm-hmm. We were getting submissions from different people, and we would pick themes like sweatshops were really interesting to us at that time. And then
when are we talking about?
This is 2000.
Okay.
And so, like, there was just different movements that we were really excited about, and so we would get video footage for those different topics, and it was hot. And so. So that's 2000, mm-hmm. and 2001 we had a lot of momentum going, and then the World Trade Towers fell, and so we had all these different independent producers create short pieces that we hosted, and then we had a live screening with that.
Uh-huh.
And in 2002, we felt a lot of people were watching our video online, but we thought if we join MNN, if we get a TV show on MNN, we could really display a lot of the information we were getting, and so that's what we did.
MNN being Manhattan Neighborhood Networks.
That's right.
Which is where Jay works. That's hence the email address mnn.org.
And it's just
a community access channel that's available in Manhattan.
It's a phenomenal organization, and anyone can watch the videos on or the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And our TV show goes on every Saturday night. We got the Saturday Night Live slot at 11:30. And
is there a webcast?
There is a webcast on the MNN website.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so, and then we also archive our TV shows. And right now, you have to use Real Player, and we're switching over to QuickTime. Mm-hmm. We never really liked Real Player. Mm-hmm. And,
what's the URL, Jim?
Conscious.com.
Conscious.org?
Okay. Conscious.com. And so, that's where a lot of our TV shows are, and, so we've started making our TV shows, and then we got a little bit more technical, and we started theming our TV shows, and the people at Free Speech TV, mm-hmm. freespeech.org, they got interested in our show, and they gave us a slot on their satellite feed, and so it's just been moving within the independent media, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's been really exciting.
So you're in your second year at ITP at
That's
NYU
right.
now. Did your past work with video move you to make you think about going to ITP first that, and then tell me a little bit about what you're doing there, if there's any projects that have to do with this or not that you might be pursuing?
Okay, Eli?
Just as a question.
Yeah.
What's the question? Eli?
Jeff, I wasn't doing this type of participatory broadcast in MNN.
Yeah, like what was it like using the IT system, and what was your reaction from people?
Well,
just repeat the question.
Yeah, the ITP project, ITJ, Interactive Telejournalism Project, that we did for the Republican National Convention was exciting because we got a lot of people involved. And when you have an event, there are so many artists in Manhattan that wanted to do something
right.
with the Republican National Convention because... You know, it affected a lot of people in a lot of different ways.
Shut that on here.
Let's see.
Keep talking. Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Here, let me take care of it.
Did you get any feedback from people about the experience, like watching it on the web or watching it live? You know.
Yeah, the feedback's been amazing. It's been just a glorious thing for people to talk about, but. There were just so many people. That's a big deal. There was just so many people that got involved with the concept. Some of them didn't even watch it. It's kind of interesting. There's people who just like to know what's going on, and this was just a real interesting test of what the technology could do and what we were able to do with it.
And what happened? Some people might not know
it. Well, Eli talked about it a little bit. We had four teams in the field. One was at the Republican National Convention, and I was with that team, and it was pretty exciting. Like we had a camera set up to a laptop. We had an Ethernet cable going into our laptop that was sending the information to Manhattan Neighborhood Network, and they were putting it live on TV. people who were watching it on TV were instructed to go to conscious.tv so that they could participate in the chat.
Right, and they could also choose between the different streams from there, so they had the option, in addition to watching the stream that was going over Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, right, they were able to just see what was going on in the convention, on the convention floor, or just see what was going on in a coffee shop that we were, you know, we had taken over in the East Village.
Right,
so the ability to choose what they were watching, and then also interact like we're doing today.
And Dan was the director at Manhattan Neighborhood Network, and he was calling which stream that the viewer for TV would watch. And I think there's a lot of viewers that were watching on TV, and we had this about 20-second blurb that would explain to them what they needed to do,
right,
and they would move over, get onto the computer, and so we were activating those passive viewers. We were getting them to actually take part in this discussion. And so it was kind of funny because we got all these questions, and some of them were rather harsh, directed at the delegates.
Yeah.
Because, well, people have opinions.
Some reason, yeah.
And, well, they would be, we would kind of dilute them a little bit, and we'd ask those questions to the people, or we wouldn't dilute them at all.
Did you meet Tim Russert?
I did meet Tim Russert. Was that a question that just came in?
Yeah.
I met Tim Russert. I told him which way to go. It was pretty exciting. I met a lot of people. The congressmen were walking around there, the senators. We were right next to Larry King Live.
Oh, wow.
And so it was a neat experience. The first night we were next to the bloggers page, or the bloggers section, and they were down by the radio section. And so basically there's so many people that at the Republican National Convention, as you can imagine, they section people off. And so we were basically in the radio and blog section, and the bloggers were really crazy. They were these, you know, they were Republican bloggers, and they were promoting the message, and they were really excited about their message, and we got to interview some of those people. We got to interview Wilson King, and he, actually I'm not sure if that's the right name, Sean, but... came and he'd worked for 20 years on the Senate floor as a reporter, and he had a lot of different insight about what he thought about the Republicans.
What did the journalists think of what you guys were doing?
Like letting the audience... Sean asked what the journalists think of what we were trying to do, what you were trying to do.
It's interesting. The radio guys, they just got it right away.
Uh-huh.
And they knew that you've got to have someone to interview, or else it's really not that good of radio. You can feel things, but you got to have someone to talk to. So we were able to just go over, and everyone wanted to get involved. There were some really even big names, and they're like, we'd have to talk to their producer. But the person wanted to get involved just because it was so new, and it was just, they could see, as producers for radio, they could see how it would work for them.
I'd also imagine radio, there's a lot of call-in shows on talk radio, and I imagine it's not too different from that, except anyone gets a say. But you have the viewers that are, or listeners in that case, asking the questions, so they might see a parallel with that.
They could see how the listener could talk to them quicker. They could see how they could get that interaction faster. And more importantly, is they wanted a camera to be on them. They wanted to be, you know, not quite TV, but just right there,
right,
you know,
right,
being out there.
And how did the people online react to that? Like, how were they dealing with asking the questions, and how involved were they? Were they itching to do this?
Sean asked how the people online would react, and how they were reacting to having the ability to ask the questions and such.
Both of us were
in the heat of the moment. Probably a little more difficult to track what was going on.
So you should talk about that.
We were both fed. Well, I wasn't too privy of what was going on in the chat rooms either, because I was more looking at the video and seeing, you know, which was more compelling. But looking back at the logs and looking at things later, I did notice that there was a lot of chat that was directed at what was going on the video screen, or you know, the conversation. And then there was a lot of chat amongst the people. A little like this, probably. I don't know exactly how it differed, but there's kind of a split, because you have the people talking amongst each other. For some reason, it's a very liberal slant,
right,
it seemed, in the chat room. And because of that, there was a lot of talk that couldn't be repeated on air. And there's
right,
a lot of things you wouldn't even want to approach these people with.
Right.
It was...
We're going to swing Jay and
Theme. Okay. What we're going to do now is bring on Jay Dedman back, and since everyone's an interviewer, there's no reason why we can't have two guests on the show at the same time. And an interviewee, exactly.
So we'll take questions from them and we'll ask each
other. Right. And so what was interesting was Sean was actually pulling the questions that we could ask the people. And then as soon as we got a question, when we were on the floor at the convention, I would be talking to the guests, just like I'm talking to Jay here, and then off camera, we would have our telejournalist ask questions to us, and that person was mic'd. And so it created an interesting discussion. You know, the Republicans, a lot of them, they were so nice.
Right.
They just killed you with kindness.
Yeah.
And they wanted to talk, and they had their opinions, and they kind of stuck. It was really interesting. They really, the people stuck to the talking points of like what you would see on a TV show. But if you drilled for a question, if you asked it again, or if you want a clarification, the person was there and they had to answer it. They couldn't avoid it, and so they really had to give their personal opinions.
Right.
And what I liked was you saw a diversity within the Republican crowd. You know, you saw a diversity within the people we were interviewing.
Plus, I think that kind of like what we're trying to do here by allowing the audience to ask us questions, which we'll start doing right now, is that you break down that wall. And so if you were to do something like this with people who are on commercial TV, you know, I don't know, could they handle this kind of interaction, like letting the audience answer pretty bold questions? Because normally when you watch Tim, it's Russert and stuff,
Russert.
He lets people get by with a lot, you know. He lets people kind of come on, say their lines. He throws a couple hard ones, but it's pretty safe. This is could be possibly dangerous television for people that have a very strict its message they're trying to get across.
Do you think it's good if you filter a little bit and avoid some of the really, really difficult or actually loaded or biased questions? Or do you think they should just go?
I think they should just go. I mean, you know, and you can choose, I guess, like right now, people can be asking us questions and we can choose what to answer and what not, and that lets the audience see where we lie, you know, by the kind of questions I take, you know.
Right.
Like,
just like on a blog, if you respond to a comment.
Right.
Like Eli just said, just like on a blog when you reply to a comment.
Right.
Or you ignore
them. Yeah. I mean, so the bias becomes very obvious by my choice of who I answer and not.
Right. It's interesting, C-SPAN does a call-in show,
yes.
A live call-in show, and where people are answering questions, and that's kind of,
right. That's
similar, it's akin to this. You know, one of the classes I'm taking at Interactive Telecommunications Program is Anthony Townsend, who is a big advocate of wireless public spaces, and I'm actually taking his wireless public space class, and he spent the summer in Korea.
Yep.
And he was studying there, and one of the interesting things he said was, if the blog sites are blowing up there, video blog sites, because everyone has really nice cameras. He said that rent would be about $400 for somebody, but it wasn't uncommon for someone to save up for months just to buy a wicked phone that had excellent, excellent capacity for storing video, for taking video. And the interesting application for that in Korea was if there was a fire in the subway, for example. You know that's going to be on the nightly news. It's going to be on there at 10 o'clock, maybe at 5 o'clock. But people would video it as it's happening and then instantly send it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people started getting their news from these video bloggers.
Right. Yeah, Chris and Shannon on the group are talking about video explosions. Evan asked, do I think that bloggers are more opinionated than traditional journalists? I think that, personally, that bloggers are just more obvious about their bias. I think all journalists have opinions. It's just they are being paid to kind of toe a party line and have, you know, a very smooth surface. Whereas bloggers, you kind of know what the deal is because my blog is my space and no one can tell me otherwise, you know?
Yeah, I guess a journalist is supposed to not take a certain side, not to take a certain party.
Right.
I remember Dan Rather, apparently he went to a Democratic fundraiser.
Yep.
And it was a big deal because he wasn't supposed to do that, and he actually had to apologize to people for doing that, because what we want to see when we're looking at when we're looking at TV, we want to see people who are not biased.
That's correct.
And so that's kind of the status quo for a journalist. Meanwhile, a blogger will give an opinion.
Journalism is supposed to be objective. Like, that's the whole...
It's supposed to be.
Right? It's supposed to be objective.
Are people starting to see through that?
Right, but I mean, yeah. So people are supposed... Journalists are supposed to be biased, but we all know that they aren't, and people are starting to see through that. Like with Fox, everyone knows that Fox is basically the mouthpiece for the Republican Party. I mean, it's very obvious, even though they keep saying they are not.
So we got a couple of questions. One is, how did people in Korea find these postings, these videos?
Right.
It's on a website, and I apologize.
The question is, you know, in Korea, if people are posting all this video to the web, where is it? I can't find it. I mean, where
right.
is it?
There's a website, and I can post it later.
Okay.
I don't have it with me right now. But
Oh My News. Oh, yeah.
Oh My News, which...
I believe that's it.
Yeah, All My Kay. News is... They're doing something very similar to this, but it's like very
wise. OhMyNews.com, right?
OhMyNews.
Yeah, OhMyNews.com is a citizen, basically, web newspaper where people can write stories and post its video. And supposedly, it's because of them that got the current president elected, right? Or something like that?
Yeah. The current president, you gave his first interview in the media.
Right.
The
Korean president right now gave his first interview to this citizen journalism website. I mean, why can't we do that here, you know?
So, and then, like, I know the Fox News is an easy comment, you know, and then it's so, but I think we're so much more complex than right and left side. I think there's so much more than just conservatives and liberals.
Right.
I think we're getting to a point where we're constantly, we have our standpoint, and if it's on the other side of your standpoint, if what you're seeing on TV, then you think it's biased. And I think people I think people say biased news way too quickly.
Right. Now, I don't know if Shannon is still out there in the audience, but, I mean, Shannon and I talk a lot by email about it video blogging, and both of us, we don't really put stuff that is newsy in our it's video blogs. We do kind of weirder kind of stuff, and that, I think, is also very important for people to be able to post its video that has nothing to do with politics or news, but just about our lives, and that in a sense is also political, you know, it's that whole, the personal is political.
Right.
And that, I think, is what I'm trying to do with its video blogging, is I just want people to start showing who they are on their its video blogs, and I think one of the big problems with that is just, is societal, you know, I think in America we're all about showing who we are and ourselves, we aren't really afraid. In like Korea,
so
I don't know.
How do you think that this is changing the media scape?
Can I reply to that real quick? Or actually, it's relevant. Sean asked a question off camera,
right.
Like, how is this changing the media scape? And for me, what you're saying is it's revealing a little bit more information than I really want to reveal online.
Mm-hmm.
some people have the photo blogs, and I've gone to Leah Belongs recently, mm-hmm. and her she's got a amazing video or photo blog site. But for me, I don't know if I want to put out quite that much information to be pursed through by people I don't know. And I kind of wonder what the point of that is.
Maybe a new persona.
Maybe I want to create a new persona, but...
Well, I think what happens is like in our small group we have now, is that we post sometimes pretty personal things, but it really isn't meant for the general public. It's just meant for this small group
community
that I'm involved with. And then if people stumble upon it, I guess they can try and figure it out. But you aren't talking to this cloudy mass. You're normally talking to individual people, you know?
Am I in the frame?
Yep.
I'm going to actually just take your microphone.
Sure, go for it.
So we're just going to bring that back here. Just to bring that, what's being talked about into the unmediated realm. You know, I think it's interesting. I think that part of what Jay's describing is the difficulty in posting video. I mean, the fact is that if the medium of blogging is quite transparent. You just type directly onto the internet, so your opinions come out quite quickly. With video and the web, you edit and you upload and you transcode, and you have this control over what's going to get seen. Mm-hmm. That, yeah, you have it with text. You cut and paste, you edit, you spell check, whatever you have to do. But because the medium of video, the language of video, is still young and people aren't used to using it, we're more afraid. We're just less able to be transparent. We can't express ourselves as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of arty, emotionally explorative pieces that people can post, but if you could post some news or politics, the fact is it's too hard right now to post politics and just day-to-day conversation with video, because it's redundant. You'd rather just post text. Right. But as the medium evolves, video can be used in a way to communicate more with that immediacy of blogging.
Right.
And I think that that's where we're moving to.
And I see it as, like, it's video being able to break down... Yeah, it's video is able to break down these cultural barriers we have, like between us and Iran. You know, there's a huge blogging community in Iran, but it's all text. I mean, imagine if they had video. It would be, we would learn so much about them just by seeing their faces and just their expressions. Mm-hmm. And all these things, you know, and seeing the way they live, you know. Like, I mean, imagine if those kids down in, where, Bolivia, is that
right,
where you were? I mean, imagine if we could just see daily video of just their lives, you know. I mean, it gives you that connection that an article in the New York Times just can't do, you know?
That's such an affluent point of view, though. I mean, that is really not a situation that those people can do. I mean, that it's...
We're going to talk about this, yeah.
That's really... We are, in the United States, very, very lucky children. One could almost say spoiled, because yeah, we have so many tools at our disposal. But going back to the expression of video, I put up my first blog last night, and so I just had stuff that I had created before, but for me, for some reason, I felt like it's something that if I had a journal or if there was something that was really bugging me, that's the kind of content I should put up, rather than something I've edited meticulously, moved over each cut. That just needs a different form. But for a blog, I think it should be kind of raw and in the least amount of editing possible.
Well, when you talk about affluent, I think it's important to, I mean, you know, we grow up, we learn cursive handwriting. We spend a year, and you know, when we're 5 years old, learning how to write cursive. We learn spelling, we learn text at such an intense level at a young age. And I don't know how it is in Bolivia in terms of literacy and what the educational system is like. 60%. Video literacy in the United States is probably somewhere around 1%, maybe even not even close to that. I mean, the ability to communicate effectively, to write sentences with video, to tell someone what you're thinking using video, it's just not there. Nobody's doing it, and that's because the language hasn't evolved. So I don't think it's a matter of affluence as much as it is education. I mean, the tools are too difficult, the language hasn't evolved yet. When you look at Iran, you look at Iraq, the bloggers that are out there, they're using the web and text, and it's not so much a matter of affluence as it is access to technology, because they have that ability to write and the ability to use this tool to put their writing directly onto the web. And I think that cell phone usage around the world is sky high. I mean, people don't have computers in a lot of cultures, but they have cell phones. So if the cell phone can do video, and then they and kids are learning how to use video at age 5, then you have a whole different ball game. And it's not a matter of affluence anymore. It's a matter of literacy.
Yep. And it's Dan says that camera phones are illegal in Saudi Arabia, and that's... Because you know why? I think a lot of these governments see that this technology that connects you to other people is dangerous, you know. And what we're doing right now would be considered very dangerous in some countries. You know?
Right.
I mean, this is just an unmediated, you know, for real show that connects us and its viewers out there.
I mean, yeah, you could have some rebel leader right here talking to the populace. And if we, you know, if we had some decent security wrapped around our stream and our chat room, no one could get in who we didn't want to get in.
That's pretty interesting. Like I in the locker room, you're not allowed to have your phone.
Sure.
You're not allowed to have a camera phone,
right.
Especially.
And
but I was just in El Salvador this summer, and like they had this Radio Libertad, and Radio Libertad was the way that the leaders were able to communicate to the guerrillas and help them move their forces. And what they would have to go through to make those broadcasts happen were amazing. I actually interviewed one of the engineers who would hide the transmitters on top of the mountains, and they would dig these holes, and they'd have to take the dirt and put it in one pile, and then take the brush and put it in one pile, and then make this crate and put their transmitters, and then they would cover it up, and then they weren't allowed to leave the site until everything was done. Even if troops were coming, they had to stay there because they couldn't compromise the site. Now, it's quite possible that a rebel leader could use this feature in, like, let's say, the Sudan. You know, maybe Johnny, who's running around over there with the people in the Sudan, and maybe he'd want to transmit his information, but it's really, it's a question of finances. Well, it's not a transmitter radio. I mean, you need some sort of infrastructure so that you could get the Wi-Fi.
I mean, just imagine, it's 2004, and look at, there's internet in every country. I mean, you know, it's going to be smaller in some countries, but it's there. I mean, it's coming, you know.
I think there's 5% of the world in every country that is just like an American.
Okay, guys, we've got 3 minutes is left, and... does anyone have any specific questions you guys just want to ask before we wrap up?
But you do have to look at it as all these things are commodities. I mean, the cell phones are commodities. Wireless access will be a commodity, and it's happening quite quickly because companies like Intel and Microsoft and Nokia, they need it to be a commodity. They need it to keep moving forward because they can't stop selling what they have today and just let us use what we have now. They need to come out with new products and get people to buy new products, which means today's technology, you know, a $2,000 Mac 12-inch laptop in 2 years will be $200 on eBay. And if it's $200 in a couple of years, who knows what it's going to be in 5-6 years. So.
And plus, I mean, it's in bad taste, I guess, but the most famous is video blogs right now are the beheading its videos. You know, these are guys that are
in
Paris Hilton, I mean, are beheading people, putting it up on the internet and getting, everyone is watching it, you know, and it's out there. And they see the power of that, you know. And
Kenyatta just brought up a really good point about how we're talking about broadcast type media, one to many. I mean, the truth is that what video needs to do as a means of communication is allow communities to develop competence amongst themselves.
Yep.
So you can have the knowledge experts in a community share their knowledge using this powerful tool of video among the community, and the level of education, of medicine, of literacy, whatever it is, all just will be raised so quickly, and communities can become more sustainable and self-sufficient. And I think that peer-to-peer type mediation or communication is essential. And yeah, the one-to-many that we're talking about is because we're trained and this is what we're used to. When you have something to say, you say it to a lot of people. Otherwise, you're just talking and hanging out and doing what you do. And video's never been a part of that. So it's a new way to think. It's a new world when you can use video just like you can use text today. And you can start to share this information in your community, in your household, in your peers when you're 15 years old.
I think
30 seconds of the tape. Let's do a little wrap up and then keep going with the screen.
Okay, we're just running out of tape here. Sadly enough, we are using tape in this process. But we're just going to wrap up here for 30 seconds, and then we're going to keep going with the stream, so don't leave. We're just doing this for the prosperity of the archive. So thanks for tuning into the weekly show. We're here every Monday at 2 Eastern Daylight Time, and we're bringing new guests on every week, and thanks a lot. See you next week. Thanks to our guests as well. Pardon.
I like Eli's point right here, but he just said that he summed up the rest of his point, but just the fact that video works really well from one to many, and it's kind of difficult to make it to go from many to many, you know?
And one to one.
Why is that?
So how do you fix that?
Well, I mean, it's what you were talking about, is like the pings and setting up the network, and okay, maybe you have 80 people on your list, but really you're dealing with the dynamic of 20 people.
Right.
And getting some kinetic energy and getting the ball rolling and then getting people to jump on.
I always imagine something like a Friendster. I mean, think of a Friendster as like this huge social network, and imagine if people could post a video to their profiles,
right,
and people could, and then when I do a recommendation for it to you, I could post a video instead of just a text thing. You know what I mean?
Friendster, are you listening?
Yeah, Friendster, you know, like something like that. I mean, it's kind of goofy, it's silly, but like that's the way we communicate. You know?
Right.
Even more, if you think of just like, and again, I'm from the U.S. and I think in my U.S. ways, but I mean, back in high school, for example, I knew a lot of girls in high school who would be, gossiping about who they liked, who they didn't like. Of course, the guys are doing this too, but we're too busy playing sports. So the girls are doing this. Now, you can see studies by the BBC, or just if you have a little sister or a friend with a little sister, they're using blogs. They're posting their day-to-day thoughts on blogs, and they're creating new friends online. They're not necessarily sharing that with their real friends, their live in-person friends. But it's not too hard to imagine a situation where you're using your camera phone while you're at school, documenting some stuff that's happening with you and your friends, and you're sharing that video over the phones with each other live while it's happening. And, you know, it's like 9021 wherever you live. You know, it's a soap opera of your day-to-day lives. And because it's video, because it's this new medium, you get really personal, it's intimate, and it's just a small peer-to-peer type of communication that takes place right now in hallways or on blogs or in instant messaging. And that, I think that's an example of something that I could see happening in the next 12, 16 months. There needs to be technology to let it happen. There needs to be some sort of framework that can allow it to work. But the fact is that it's a natural thing for people to do, to communicate, to talk about things, to show someone what just happened because you want them to talk about it. So when you talk about video blogging and the group that's out there, I'm really interested in group projects where we do something as a decentralized production crew, trying to communicate using these tools, trying to find a new way to explore certain ideas.
Right. Kenyatta made a good point on the chat here that, you know, once we start to really use its video in everyday life, it's going to change how we learn and how we communicate. And I think that kids who are like 10 right now or 8, they're the ones that are really going to get this and really embrace it, I think.
I would actually believe that that's already happened, that people learn a tremendous amount from video.
I mean, it's rich information.
It's been like this slow building thing, I think, since like the 60s. And then with Walter Cronkite and the big network news and just how everybody would get their information from that. And now it's like it's Jon Stewart. It's like moving to the cable because so many get the information that they have and they share with their friends from like comedy shows. And so exactly where blogs will, what role that will play, it's interesting. Will it go the way of Korea, or will it just where it's people are depending on that information for their lives? Or will it just become some sort of a community and a closed community where people start worrying about who is watching their 13-year-old daughter and start putting up barriers? And suddenly, I believe there's a lot of communities that exist that are really closed, you know, online. And maybe that will happen, you know?
With the Daily Show, I think it's actually not that people are getting their information from the Daily Show, but rather what the Daily Show does, it takes the echo and resonance of just day-to-day popular culture and media that you hear without paying attention to, and it annotates on top of it. You know, it creates comedy out of the things that you don't think about but you know. And so it's not necessarily that we're getting information from the Daily Show, but rather the audience of the Daily Show, which is mostly young people who are the most media savvy and who pay attention to everything, it's funny to them. Because they're already, they've got all this stuff inside of them, and they're making fun of what we didn't even realize we knew, and it's just funny. Evan made a nice point here. He says, Kenyatta was talking about if we could communicate just as with video as easily as we use text, and he says, although as easily as we use text in quotes is a loaded phrase. Well, Evan, if you could elaborate on what you mean there. When I think of the way you could communicate using video, it's actually easier than using text. Text is a slow medium compared to video. I mean, think about a book versus a movie, or just a 30-second commercial versus a book. Text is not as effective as video. I mean, video is a brainwashing tool if it's used the way it is today. So if you have a situation where people can communicate using video, it's going to be so much easier, because think about how much video there is. Television, millions of hours a day is produced and sent over the airwaves, sent over the cable, over IP. And if we had Google into this video, if we had access into what we wanted to use, if we had open source media archives and cameras that we could easily capture good media with, it's a whole different ballgame.
And now, okay, real quick, so to wrap this up, what do you think needs to happen for your a vision to come true? Because I think we all share this idea.
Well, we got to keep doing things like this. We got to keep getting people involved let them realize that there's new things that can be done. There's new ways to communicate, and there's an outlet for all sorts of ideas. We have to focus development efforts on to solving some of the practical problems that are out there, and we need to we have to work with the existing tools that are out there as well, and augment them and make them better, such as video cameras or editing systems or broadband or blogging. And we have to just sort of sit on top of these things and try and figure out ways to do it. And then, very importantly, just creating new creative ways to work together and try out things and experiment and be willing to make a fool of yourself, be willing to do something wrong and make mistakes, because otherwise we're never going to figure this thing out. So let's see if there's any more questions, and we're going to wrap up.
I think one of the keys is really to be strategic. Really be strategic for the way that you use video blogging, because I think it will stay. It's going to be here. I think we see that. One thing that Sean and I were talking about doing is for the debates, for the vice presidential debates, have the debate running and allow people to write their comments and just to say what they feel. And I don't know. Sometimes when I sit with a big group and I watch the debates, I feel like I'm not really experiencing it personally. I'm kind of part of a crowd. But I think for some people who might not watch the debates, doing a blog or a video blog and having a way that they can interact with it, that will get a new audience interested in political issues.
Well, it's already happening. What you're describing is blogging. I mean, everyone's watching the debates and blogging about it, and it's already out there. And
but do it live.
Well, tons of people are, way more than are using video. But live, I mean, the debates are just a press release anyway. It's not really too much new information. So, but you, I understand what you're saying.
But it's a strategic deployment of the technology.
But the key there is to getting the audience involved and to turn around that spin.
Sean saying the key is to turn around the spin, yeah.
By letting the
conversation filter out.
Because a lot of people watch those debates, and then afterwards the spin doctors come on, and depending on what channel you're watching, you know, you could walk away after having a feeling of what was said and what was expressed with a completely different interpretation, because you have somebody who's coming in who is an expert.
Yeah, absolutely. But the beautiful thing is that most people right now are consuming less and less of the broadcast media and more of the unmediated media, so you've got a situation where there's more spin to deal with, so you have to become more objective and more interested in the truth. So thank you all for tuning in to the weekly show here.
Thank you
again.
Very much.
See you next
the
week.
Unmediated.
And come to our conscious.com with a K,
conscious.
And momentshowing.typad.com. Thank you to our guests.
Thank you very much.
And see you next week.
See you next week.
All right.
And we got a